Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the health report and explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we look back on the actions of the militant group ISIS and the effect those actions had on Syria and Iraq.
When Fallujah fell, that should have been a wake-up call. We've sleepwalked into this problem and have got in very late in the game.
Then we report on how changes in American politics could affect negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program.
The Obama administration believes that with the new Congress that will be seated in January, it can't go to them right away and ask for a vote to lift sanctions.
The effect of ISIS in 2014, and how American politics in 2015 may affect nuclear negotiations with Iran. Those are our stories today on As It Is from VOA. The actions of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, have angered people in many countries. The group enslaved people and executed hostages. They put videos of some of the executions on the internet. Militants who were members of Al-Qaeda in Iraq helped create ISIS. Michael Stevens is a director of the Royal United Services Institute, a research group. He says the fast rise of ISIS in 2014 surprised many observers.
It was very clear that there were problems building up in Iraq at the end of 2013, but everybody was distracted by Syria. And when ISIS actually did hit in Iraq, it changed the game completely.
The group's first major victory happened in early January, when it seized the Iraqi town of Fallujah. Sajan Gohel is the Director of International Security for the Asia-Pacific Foundation, a group that studies terrorism.
When Fallujah fell, that should have been a wake-up call. We've sleepwalked into this problem and have got in very late in the game.
In June, ISIS took control of Mosul, Iraq's second largest city. Iraqi soldiers fled. ISIS seized the weapons they left behind and about $400 million. The terrorist group then began calling itself the Islamic State and seized large areas of northern Syria and Iraq. Sajan Gohel says the Islamic State caused countries that rarely cooperate to work together.
ISIS has united the international community, where you have partners that have often had very terse relationships, such as Iran and the United States. Also the Gulf Arab countries that have never got involved in the battle against extremists in the past in a meaningful way.
Forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad continue to attack opposition rebel forces in Syria. The Free Syrian Army is now fighting both government and Islamist forces. The group has asked Western countries for help. But at this point, they have not given the rebels the weapons they have asked for. Michael Stevens says that may soon change.
I think next year what you will see is a more express commitment from the Americans as they realize more and more is needed in order to stop both Iraq and Syria sort of collapsing into nothingness.
As the threat from the Islamic State grows, experts say international leaders will face increasing pressure to fight the terror group, both from the air and on the ground in Iraq and Syria. You are listening to As It Is from The Voice of America. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says he will continue to try to negotiate an end to the dispute between Iran and Western nations over Iran's nuclear program. Iran and six world powers failed to reach an agreement on limiting the program. Negotiators had set a time limit in November. However, the U.S. Congress may not accept any deal, even if the negotiators reach an agreement. In September 2013, Mr. Kerry was hopeful as he began his first official meeting with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. Mr. Zarif says the two men discussed Iran's nuclear program.
Now we have to see whether we can match our positive words with serious deeds so that we can move forward.
Since then, the two men have met many times. Negotiators for Iran and the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council and Germany have been trying to reach an agreement on limiting Iran's nuclear enrichment activity. Iran says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes. But some Western nations believe Iran is trying to make nuclear weapons. If Iran agrees to limit its nuclear program, financial restrictions, called sanctions, could be eased. The sanctions have severely damaged Iran's economy. After a series of meetings in the first 6 months of this year, negotiators extended their talks to November 24th. Then, the talks were extended again. Mr. Kerry told reporters the extensions were no guarantee that the talks would be successful.
These talks aren't going to suddenly get easier just because we extend them. They're tough, and they've been tough, and they're going to stay tough.
Mr. Zarif says one problem is neither side trusts the other.
The major obstacle was that there is a compounded mistrust, mutual.
Negotiators now hope to reach a deal by July. However, the change in power in the U.S. Senate might affect the talks. Republicans, who oppose many of the policies of President Obama, won control of the Senate. The Republican-controlled Senate may not agree to end sanctions quickly, even if negotiators reach an agreement. Robert Einhorn is a senior fellow at the Arms Control and Non-Proliferation Initiative at the Brookings Institution, a research group. He says the Obama administration will wait for the International Atomic Energy Agency to report on whether Iran is cooperating with international nuclear inspections.
The Obama administration believes that with the new Congress that will be seated in January, it can't go to them right away and ask for a vote to lift sanctions. They believe that the case will be much stronger later on if and when the IAEA reaches a conclusion that Iran is in compliance.
Mr. Einhorn says members of Congress may take action against Iran if negotiators do not reach an agreement soon. Secretary Kerry says negotiators still have, in his words, significant points of disagreement, but he says they believe an agreement is still possible. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. The spread of Western eating habits around the world is bad for human health and for the environment. Those findings come from a new report in the journal Nature. There are ways to solve this diet, health, environment problem, but they will require a change in eating habits. And what we eat can be a product of culture, personal taste, price, and ease. David Tillman is a professor of ecology at the University of Minnesota. In the study, he examined information from 100 countries to identify what people ate and how diet affected health. Mr. Tillman noted a movement beginning in the 1960s. He found that as nations industrialized, population increased, and earnings rose. More people began to adopt what has been called the Western diet. The Western diet is high in refined or processed sugar, fat, oil, and meat. By eating these foods, people began to get fatter and sicker.
The excess, let's say, in the 15 richest nations in the world right now is on the order of about 400 or 500 extra calories a day that are eaten beyond what people need, and that leads to people to gain weight.
David Tillman says overweight people are at greater risk for non-infectious diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers.
Diabetes is shooting to very high rates in the United States and across Europe. Heart disease is a major cause of mortality in the Western countries. And unfortunately, when people become industrialized, if they adopt this Western diet, they're going to have these same health impacts. And in some cases, if you're Asian, actually have them more severely than even happens in the West.
China, he says, is an example where the number of diabetes cases has jumped.
From less than 1% to 10% of the population having diabetes as they began to industrialize over a 20-year period. And that hasn't leveled off yet. That's still going up. So, and that is happening all across the world, in Mexico and Nigeria and so on, just nation after nation.
And a diet bad for human beings, it seems, is also bad for the environment. As the world's population grows, experts say more forests and tropical areas will become farmland for crops or grasslands for grazing cattle. These areas will be needed to meet the increasing demand for food.
We're likely to have more greenhouse gas released in the future from agriculture because of this dietary shift than all the greenhouse gas that right now comes out of all of the cars and all the airplanes, boats, and ships, all forms of transportation. So our change in diet is likely to be worse for the world for climate warming than all the transportation sources we use right now.
Mr. Tillman calls the link between diet, the environment, and human health a trilemma. This is a play on the word dilemma, a problem offering a difficult choice. He says one possible solution is leaving the Western diet behind. I'm Anna Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, I'm Shirley Griffith with a program for the holiday season in special English. Christians around the world are celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ. Over the years, Christmas music has become an important part of the holiday tradition. Today, we will hear a program of Christmas music performed by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. That was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir with Joy to the World. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir is one of the largest singing groups in the world. It has more than 300 singers. The members of the choir offer their time and skills without payment. All choir members are Mormons who belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Many Christmas songs sound most beautiful when sung by a large group. Here is the choir performing a Ukrainian song, Carol of the Bells.
Thank you.
Night is perhaps the best known of all Christmas songs. An Austrian clergyman named Joseph Moore wrote the words. His friend, Franz Gruber, wrote the music. The song was performed for the first time at a religious service on the night before Christmas in 1818. At that time, it was performed with a single musical instrument. A guitar. Here are the men of the Tabernacle Choir with Silent Night.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. Round yon world.
The Mormon Tabernacle Choir is based at the Mormon Tabernacle in Salt Lake City, Utah. The choir made its first recording in 1910. Since then, it has made more than 150 recordings. One recording of holiday music is called A Mormon Tabernacle Choir Christmas. You are listening to music from that recording. This is Shirley Griffith. We hope you enjoyed our program of Christmas music. This program was written by George Grow. Our producer was June Sims. All of us in VOA Learning English wish you a very happy holiday season.